today is Father's Day, I believe, if I looked at the calendar correctly. This Father's Day is kind of nice for me that this is the first time since I've had children that I've had one of them actually pick out a Father's Day gift for me personally. That Mac had a lot of input on a Father's Day present for me. I think originally he wanted to get me a Transformers toy. He's really big into Transformers, and that's so he really wanted to get that for me. I think that a lot of times, though, we'll go to the store, and he says that each one of us need to get one. And I'm pretty sure his motivations aren't 100% pure. But he wanted to get that for me, and Autumn kind of redirected that. Said, "Well, maybe not a toy, but how about a shirt?" So Mac picked out a Transformers shirt for me. For those of you that aren't familiar with Transformers, I'm sure that Mac would be more than happy to speak to you at length about them. But they are little robot toys that they turn in from a robot to a car or a truck or something. Like that. That's why they're Transformers. So this shirt that I have, it's bright red, so it's obvious that I'm wearing it, and it has a Transformer. Optimus Prime is the Transformer's name. That he's a semi that, you know, turns into a robot, and in his robot form, he's riding on top of a robot dinosaur. And so that's the shirt that I got for Father's Day, and I'm it's maybe not the shirt that I probably would have picked out for myself, but I'm proud to wear it because my son picked it out for me. It's interesting when I look at lessons especially on Father's Day and Mother's Day, and I like to kind of direct a lesson on whatever holiday, usually something kind of geared towards that, because that's where our minds are anyway. That's kind of what we're thinking about. Mother's Day it's kind of easy for me because a lot of times that, well, there's so much positive information and exhortation throughout the Bible on mothers, and there's so many great examples of what good godly mothers are supposed to be like in the Bible. Unfortunately, many of the examples of fathers in the Bible are not that great. There's a lot of good information. There's a lot of good positive admonitions about what we ought to be as fathers. But unfortunately, there's not as many really good examples. There are a lot of great godly men in the Bible that wind up failing as far as fathers, that they, despite the fact that they serve God themselves faithfully, it seems like they almost ignored their kids or the responsibility of raising their kids. Unfortunately, that trend hasn't seemed to abated any, and in our present day culture, it seems like there are so many fathers or men that have fathered children that don't care about actually raising their kids. But this goes directly against what God desires for men as parents. We have throughout the Bible exhortations for fathers to step up and to train their kids, to raise their kids. One of the main verses that we look at as far as this is concerned in the New Testament is Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. It reads, "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." This is a verse that's probably familiar to many of us. Bring our children up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Even though this lesson this morning is directed specifically towards fathers, it definitely applies to both mothers and fathers, in that it is equally our responsibility to do this very thing, to bring them up, to raise them, to train them in the care or the training and admonition of the Lord. Many times when we think of fathers and the responsibility of fathers, and I have preached this as well, and as men, that men are providers. And I've stated as much that if you think of a very basic, in very basic terms, in very simple terms, what the responsibility of a mother is, the responsibility of a father is, and say that a mother is a nurturer. That's what a mother does, where the father, the man, is the provider. But what does a father provide? Is it merely physical things? The father is maybe the primary breadwinner, at least traditionally that's the role that the father plays, that he's the breadwinner. So he goes to work and he earns the income so that the family can have a roof over their head and food to eat and clothes and so on and so forth. As a provider, you think, well, that is traditionally or generally what we think of. But that's not the only thing a father is to provide. Yes, a parent, and I'll say generally, a parent is to provide those physical things for their children. And I don't just say father, because you look at the role of a mother, and many times when you preach a Mother's Day lesson, you think of the virtuous woman of Proverbs, and you see what she's doing, and she is a great provider in and of herself in what she does. And the things that she provides among physical things are nurture and care for her family. Well, just so a father as a provider provides physical things, but more than that, and one of the main things and one of the main overlooked things that a father is to provide is training. Training. It's more than just providing those basic things that a child needs, but actually raising the child, training them. Public schools are a great resource. For one, it gets the kids out of your hair for a few hours a day. But unfortunately, that almost seems to be the main goal of many parents, just to get the kids out of their hair for a little bit. A babysitting service. Unfortunately, many parents, they send their kids to a public school and think, well, it's the teacher's responsibility to train, to educate my child. And that's simply not true. Parents, and specifically this morning, fathers, are to train their children. It's my responsibility as a parent to make sure that my child is educated. And as a Christian parent, doubly so, that they are brought up, that they are trained in the Lord. I want to look a little bit closer at this verse this morning, Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. There are really two different parts to this verse. There's the first one, that it is a negative command or a negative admonition. Do not provoke your children to wrath. The second part is it's in the affirmative, it's positive, but affirmatively, bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. First, I want to look at that the negative portion, the negative command there. Do not provoke your children to wrath. Now, that term provoke is used twice throughout the New Testament, and it's used both in regards to this type of training. Here, this word provoke, it literally means to, well, I say literally, that it has the idea of pushing someone's buttons. You are trying to make them mad. You are trying purposefully to anger them. Now you think, well, as a parent, why in the world would I try to make my child upset? I don't have to do very much for my children to get upset. I don't want to purposefully do this, but it's easy to do, though, isn't it? As a parent, especially as a man, I'm bigger than they are. I have power over them. I can do with them just about anything that I want to do, right? It's easy for me to pick at them, to pick on them, to push their buttons, to get them upset. I could do that if I want. I'm specifically, though, told I need to control that. I'm not to do that. I'm not to purposefully anger them. Again, twice in the New Testament that we're told, do not provoke your children. Here, do not provoke them to wrath. Do not intentionally push their buttons to anger them. Again, with a little bit different idea, in Colossians chapter 3, verse 21, we're told, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. There, that word provoke, it's from the same root word, but it has a little bit different idea. We're in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, it's talking about an intentional angering them. Here, this one is, it could be a positive thing or a negative thing. It has the idea of more to stir up. You know, in Hebrews chapter 10, we're told to not forsake the assembling of ourselves together. We are to stir up love and good works among one another. Well, just so that you can stir up love and good works, but you can also stir up anger. You can stir up wrath. Well, what happens when a child is constantly picked at, picked upon, when they are put down? Lest they become discouraged. In the original language there, that word discouraged, it literally means to be spiritless. To the point where you break their spirit. You see kids like this. Kids that are abused. Kids that are neglected. You can tell. After a while, if you're around enough kids that you say, there's something wrong. There's something wrong with this child. And it's got to be from their home life. That a normal kid in a normal family where you have the loving, nurturing mother, where you have the father that provides the training, the care for this child, that this type of thing just doesn't happen. There's something wrong here. Unless they become discouraged, become spiritless, broken spirit, to lose heart. Now, as a Christian, and I'm looking at this, that Paul is writing to the Ephesians here, the church in Ephesus, do not provoke your child. Well, what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. As a Christian parent, as a father, my goal is to get my children to heaven. So what happens if, because of whatever, because I have a bad day at work, not because I'm just intentionally a mean person, but if I have a bad day at work or something's going wrong, that I go off on my children, that I'm constantly negative towards them, that I push my problems off on them all the time, so much so that they lose heart. I break their spirit. 4-year-old is not ready for grown-up things. It's easy though. I can project because it's not my problem. I didn't cause this. It's not my fault. I get angry. Well, you know what? I find it's easy to kick dogs, right? When you get angry, it is, right? Dog does something dumb, I all of a sudden it gets in my way and I trip over it. Well, whose fault is it? Well, it's obviously the dog's fault. Well, do kids ever get in our way? Do we ever trip over them? Well, it's obviously the child's fault. Don't you know I've spent 8, 10, 12 hours at work, that it's been a hard day, that I'm trying to pay bills, that... Do not provoke your children to wrath. You know how children learn to be parents? Their parents. That's how they learn to be parents. You say, oh, you're just like your mother. You're just like your father. You know why? Because that's where the child learns. Do not provoke your children to wrath. There, this is not really about the child. This is about me. This is about me controlling myself. You need to control yourself. This is a negative command as far as it's specifically speaking about me and what I need to do. I can't always control my child. And you know what? Children mess up. You know, my kids don't always do what I want them to. Even when they try to do what I'm asking them to do, they don't always do that. I get frustrated at them. How can you not do that? Or why did you do this? It seems so obvious. But they're little children. I'm an adult. I know better. I should be able to do this. Really, ultimately it's about sacrifice, right? I'm the one that decided to have children. Even if I didn't decide to have children, if it happens, because one of the byproducts of marriage many times is children. Well, I have children now. Now I am responsible. Now I have to give up some of what... The other day for our anniversary, my mom kept the kids, and we went into Waco and saw a movie. We were thinking about it. Well, the last time we went and saw a movie, just the two of us, was around this time last year. You know what we used to do all the time before we had kids? I mean, almost every week. Almost every week we'd go to the movies. That was just one of the things that we really enjoyed doing. But now we have kids. That's not much of a sacrifice. It's really not. You think, well, it's kind of nice not to have them, to be able to go and do something without them. It's kind of weird not having them, actually. But you give up something like that as a parent, right? You give up more than just that, though. That's small. That's insignificant. As a parent, I have to give up a lot, right? They require a lot of time, a lot of attention. If I'm actually going to train them, both of my kids, even little, they have tablets. Now that I look back on it, I'm like, was that the wisest thing for me to do? But they have internet access, right? Very, very limited. They can watch videos, cartoons, or whatever they want on these things to a certain extent. If I wanted to, I could stick that in their bed with them, and they could just stay there or eat chips all day long in their bed watching this, and I don't have to really worry about them. That for the most part, I could leave them there. That would be easy. I don't really have to do much. I don't actually have to train them. I can just make sure that they are entertained enough to where I don't really have to do anything. But if I actually want to train them, if I actually want to raise them, then what? We do have some good examples of being a parent, being a father. John chapter 3, verse 16, one of the most famous verses in the Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. He sacrificed everything, his very best, for whom? For us, his children. He sacrificed everything for his children. So what should I do for mine? Why did he sacrifice for his children? He sacrificed so that we might be saved. As a father, what am I willing to do that my children might come to the knowledge of the truth? Who's going to teach them that knowledge? Who's going to give them that knowledge? Well, that's me as a parent. To bring them up, to train them in the training, the care, and the admonition of the Lord. I was talking to Autumn about it the other day. Every time we see parents that have more kids than we do, how do they do it? How do they do it? We took Mac and Avery to the little splash pad that they have, the little water park that they have in Gatesville. And there was a young couple that came in that I don't think that they were as old as I am, and they had four little kids from about six down. That's a lot of kids. How in the world do they do that? Because I see how much attention just two kids takes away. Looking out our kitchen window, we actually have quite a few sets of birds that have made their home under the back porch. One of them, some barn swallows, built their nest on a floodlight that we have out there. But it's kind of interesting watching them, and they have three little chicks in there. And those birds, all they do is feed their chicks. That's about all. You see them, that the parents are constantly gone, and when they show up, they're there feeding those chicks, and we were sitting out there watching them, and those little birds had their mouths open, stuck out their ugly little heads, because little birds are ugly, but they had them stuck out over the edge of that nest, and there they were, just waiting. And all those two birds do, the parents, are fly out and feed those birds. Constantly, those little chicks are the life of those two birds. They don't do anything else. They feed themselves and they feed their chicks. And that's about it, constantly. You think, how in the world do they do that all the time? Well, really, they only have a relatively short time, just a few months of constant work, and then those chicks are gone, right? And then they have time on their own until the next brood, I guess. But you know what? That's no different than me. For the period of time that I have my children under my house, that's my responsibility. It's them. And I'm supposed to do so much more than just what those birds do. All those birds do as animals is just try to keep them alive. And you see every year around, as soon as spring comes and you see bird nests start popping up, every once in a while you'll walk around where the bird nests are and you'll see a little bird fell out of the nest and died. Well, all that bird is trying to do is keep their kids alive, right? But as a Christian, my job is so much more than that. It's more than just trying to keep my child alive. Anybody can do that. There's a lot of people that they're able to keep their children alive, and yet they do that. I'm trying to get my kids to heaven. Do not provoke your child to wrath. But, and we see that positive command, bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Bring them up. And that's the key right there. It's my responsibility to bring them up. Now, I went and I looked this up in the original language in the Greek there. Bring them up, the word there, it means to feed, to nourish, to nurture. Now, as I stated before, that a lot of times we think of the mother's responsibility. What does the mother provide? What does she do best? Well, nurture, right? But here it says, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up, nurture them in the training and admonition of the Lord. Well, wait, isn't that the mother's job to nurture, to feed? Well, I guess she's not the only one. And see, that's what I forget sometimes. Oh, well, I'm the father. I'm the provider. I'm the breadwinner. That's my job, is to go out and do that. Yes, it is. But not only that. I'm not an animal. I'm not a bird that my sole priority is just trying to keep my child alive. That's only part of it. I need to take care of the physical, but how much more important is the spiritual? I want you to think about the difference between a mother and a father. What are our jobs? If you break it down and say, well, the father's the provider, the mother's the nurturer, but is that all they do? Are they only boxed in to where that's their sole thing? Well, of course not. We see, and again, the virtuous woman in Proverbs, she provides. Physically, she provides. We're told that she considers a field and she purchased it. She went out and she makes products and she buys and sells and trades. She provided physical things for her family. Here, we're told that a father is to nurture, to train. You go back to Genesis chapter 2, when you have Eve created and brought to Adam. You see man and woman there for the first time. God knew what he was doing when he created Eve. He says, he looks at Adam and he said, it's not good for man to be alone. We need to make a helper comparable to him. That word comparable, I've said it before, it means to stand face to face. I was thinking about this, especially when you look at, you know, the relationship of a mother and father, that help comparable, that standing face to face, it's like your hands, right? My hands, they're pretty well the same, right? Almost, except there's one big difference. That's a right hand and that's a left hand. imagine picking up a box, a big box. Not necessarily heavy, but something you use two hands for. It's not too terribly hard. It's not that heavy, but it could be a little bit cumbersome. But using two hands, I can lift that box and I can move it around and I can do what I need to. I can manipulate it fairly easy because God provided me two hands that make that possible. What about only one hand? Can I still move the box with one hand? Yes, I can. It's more difficult. My Uncle Lee that... in Land Passes, that his right hand is crippled since birth, that he can't manipulate things, especially small things, very well with it. He can't grip with it. One of the things that always amazed me was how he would drive a nail, because he couldn't hold the nail with one hand and hammer with others. The other thing is, he's right-handed, so he actually had to use his left hand for everything. Well, he couldn't hold a nail and hammer it, so he would take a piece of cloth, wad it up in his hand, hold that nail there, drive it into the wood with his hand, and then he would hammer it. And that's amazing that he was able to do that, and that he would be able to drive a nail basically halfway into a piece of wood just using his hand. But I saw him do that, and it was amazing what he could do with one hand. But you know what? It still wasn't good as that opposite one. The one wasn't functioning like it should have been. What if I had two left hands? You know, we talk about two left feet, right? I can't dance because I have two left feet. It doesn't matter how many feet I have. I couldn't dance if I wanted to. But if I had two left hands, could I pick up that box? I could, but it would be awkward, right? It would be weird. I'd have something else. Maybe I could put this hand underneath it and grab it with this one. But you know what? Having that other hand there, that the opposite, sure does help. Yes, I can do the same thing that with my right hand that I can do with my left. Not as good, because I can manipulate my left hand differently. You know, I was thinking about the other day, taking off a jar, the lid of a jar. I always do it the same way. I grab it with this hand, turn this one upside down, and my left hand does things my right hand doesn't do. But I'm right-handed. My right hand does a whole lot of things different than my left hand. But I need both of them. They're different. Because they're different, they have different roles. But they work opposite of each other. And that's what a mother and father do. They're different, and so they have different roles. They do a lot of the same thing. Bring them up, raise them in the training, that discipline. And that's really what that word means. And not merely a punishment discipline, but teaching that child discipline. Proverbs, and when you look at the book of Proverbs, the first nine chapters of the book of Proverbs is Solomon giving instructions to his son. Proverbs chapter 1, starting in verse 1, it says, "The Proverbs of Solomon to the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel, to understand a proverb, an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles, to fear the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother." Training, teaching discipline. This is what you want to do. This is how you control yourself. This is how you discipline yourself. So many times today, you see parents more than willing to take their kids out for sports. And one of the main things is, you teach teamwork, teach discipline, even good sportsmanship. When you lose, shake the other team's hand. You need to show up for practice. Do the hard part so the fun part is that much better. Right? And we want to train them, and we understand the value of things like that. Teaching discipline. hopefully we take it so much further beyond the ball field, though. Actually teaching how to control ourselves, discipline ourselves. Training and admonition. That word admonition is, it's kind of unpleasant. It's a warning. It's a warning. It basically, you need to be careful about what you do, but more importantly about what you don't do. You see, the reason why admonishing someone is hard is because I need to do that to myself first. As a parent, how do my children learn? By what they said. And my dad always was trying to teach us. And it wasn't just that he would tell us a lot of things. He would tell us, I am trying to teach you this. And he would instruct us. And he did that a lot. And I'm thankful for it. But even more than that, even more than what he said, and I remember a lot of what he said, but I remember more of what he did. Our kids remember those type of things. And that's scary for me now. You know, I could poke at my mom for, you know, things when we were younger. And I think about, I'm paying for my raising now. And I see a lot of myself in my son. Proverbs chapter 1 verse 10 says, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If sinners entice you, do not consent. I need to make sure that I'm following that. I need to make sure that I understand that so that my son will. If I am enticed by sin, and my child sees that, how am I going to honestly admonish them to steer away from sin? It's interesting when you think about Solomon, the wisdom. It's obvious. The first nine chapters of this book are just amazing, the wisdom, the practicality. You go in and someone asked me one time, well, I went to study with my child that they already believed in God, that they were just struggling with the world. What can I instruct them on? I said, study with them the first nine books, the first nine chapters of the book of Proverbs. There is so much good wisdom there. But you think of Solomon. Solomon wasn't that great of an example. As wise as a man as he was, he followed his own desires. We see this even through the book of Ecclesiastes, and ultimately we see the result of it in his son Rehoboam. And it's hard for me not to think of Rehoboam when in verse 8 of Proverbs chapter 1 he says, my son, hear the instruction of your father. And yet you see Rehoboam doing the very opposite. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. We have the culmination of all of his wisdom. I had a parent when I was in Fort Worth that she asked me to review a parenting book. It was called Scream-Free Parenting. Okay, it got a lot of good reviews about how to not be as frustrated with your child. And she asked me to review this book, and I did. And it didn't take too terribly long to get through this book to see that it was junk. It was truly just, it was horrible. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 12 says, and further, my son, be admonished by these. Of many books there is no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh. There's a lot of advice about parenting and all sorts of things out there. There's a lot of things that can easily distract us and lead us away, entertain us, draw us away from fulfilling our responsibility as parents. And it's easy. There's so much information and ease of access of it that, you know, I can give my child a phone or a tablet or whatnot, my two-year-old, and, you know, stuff her in a room, and she can be entertained for hours with that, and I don't have to do anything. But then they'd never get the next verse, verse 13 of Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commands, for this is man's all. You see, that's the thing that I need to do. I need to teach them that. Verse 7 again of Proverbs chapter 1, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Who is going to instruct my children in that if not me? If I don't instruct them, if I don't teach them, the world will. And they won't teach them this. They won't teach them the Bible. And if I don't live like I should, if I don't live the Christian life, it doesn't matter what I say. As a parent, one of the things that I have to remember is that I will never have more influence over anyone else more than I will have over my children, because I have them from the time they're born. I have so much more influence over them than anybody else. So what am I doing with that influence? God says, bring them up in the care and admonition of the Lord. And we need to encourage our children, our grandchildren, anybody that we can. This is what we need to be doing as parents, grandparents, as Christians. And I offer the invitation this morning. If you're a subject, realize that this lesson was directed towards parents, towards fathers specifically, but all of these things apply to all of us. If I'm going to be a good influence on people in the world, whether it's my children, my family, my neighbors, whoever it is, I need to live like this. I need to be able to learn to control myself. I need to focus on God, that I might be what I ought to be, that I can let my light shine before the world, that they might see God through me. Hopefully we understand this. Hopefully we realize this. If you are subject to the invitation, if you realize that you haven't been doing that, if you haven't been that light that you should, turn from that. Turn back to God. If you have a need, if you have a concern, if there's anything we can do for you, prayers of the congregation, whatever it might be, we encourage you, please come as we stand and sing this song.